Okay, we're starting at the bottom of Bet Amud Bet. The Gemara now is going to address the question which we were discussing yesterday, which is, what is this Mishnah doing here? As well as, what's the structure of the Mishnah, why the Mishnah is structured this way? Tosfos asked the basic question before we start is, how could the Gemara even ask this question? We know from other places that when it comes to, for instance, Stam, B'achar Kach Machloket, or Machloket, B'achar Kach Stam, we know that the Gemara says that when it comes to two Masechtot, we don't consider there to be a Seder between two Masechtot. We only consider there to be a Seder within one Masechta. So then how could you ask, what is Masechet Shvot doing after Masechet Makot, if there's really no order? So Tosfos says, no, it's true by Stam, B'achar Kach Machloket, Machloket, B'achar Stam, by two Masechtot, you can draw no conclusions, because we don't know how Rebbe taught his students. We don't know which order he taught them or which Masechta he taught them first. But once they were Masader the Mishnah, once they established the Mishnah and they put it into a framework, then you can ask the basic question is, what is Masechet Shvuot doing here after Masechet Makot? And that's what the Gemara is going to ask here. Michtei, Tana mi Makot Salik, Maishna de Tani Shvuot. The Mishnah was left off. The Gemara says, Michtei, Tana mi Makot Salik. Right, we just finished Seder, we finished Masechet Makot. Maishna de Tani Shvuot. Why is the next Masechet Shvuot? Mishum. Because the Mishnayot that ended off Masechet Makot are Chayav al Rosh, Shtaim, Achat Mikan, Vachat Mikan. When it comes to the Peot al Rosh, even though there's only one Isur in the Torah of Lo Takivu Pa'at Rosh Chem, nevertheless, we say that you're chayav for shtei peyot, for the two corners of the head. V'yala zakan, and the same thing comes with through the giluach hazakan. It says, shtaimikan v'chad milamato. So even though there is only one restriction, one lav in the Torah, really two lavin, but there's one lav about being megaleach, nevertheless, we say there are 5 points that you're going to be chayav for on your face for giluach. So all of these are chado, de mechayev ala tarte. One lav that ends up having numerous permutations or manifestations. Lo takivu pat rosh chem, two restrictions that come out of one lav. Lo, right, on the giluach of the zakan. Also over there, one lav that ends up with 5 restrictions or 5 permutations of how you can be chayav. So over here, tana shvuot shtayin shehein arba. So that's, therefore, it went over here and uses that same sort of formulation, which is, we have two that are explicit in the Pasuk, that we have that derive into 4, or have 4 manifestations, rather than the 2 that we know from the Pesukim. So the same idea that is present in those last Mishnayot in Makot is also now present in the beginning of Shavuot. Now, I give you the Mar Mekumot, I'll send them out again on the email, but it's a very important Tosfot over here. Tosfot over here says, when it comes to Chayav al Rosh Taim, says you're Chayav for both Peot. Tosfos makes a distinction which is not clear from the Gemara, and it is a machloket harishonim. Tosfos says over here, Nira, dafakav al dala zakan, enu mechayav ela bitar, that when it comes to shaving, one is not chayav except if you use a razor. Nevertheless, when it comes to bakafat arosh, chayav af b'misparayim keintar. When it comes to your peot, you don't need a tar to be chayav. Even if you use scissors like a tar, you use them, you cut the very short, the peot, that's enough to be chayav by hakafat arosh. So Tosfos here draws a distinction between shaving and the peot hazakan, which you are only chayav for ta'ar, because they're defined by hashchata and giluach, which is the limud that we had in Makot, whereas the kivu pat rosh chem is not subject to that restriction of giluach and hashchata, simply has to do with the removal of the hair. Now, obviously the removal of the hair, to make it lo takivu pat rosh chem, you have to remove the hair. So that's what Tosfos says, it has to be a misparayim ke'en ta'ar. Can't be that you just cut normal haircut, because that doesn't get rid of the peyot is still here. You have to cut it so close, you know, so finely or so close that it doesn't feel like the peyot are there anymore. So that you could do with the scissor. Obviously you can't get as close as a razor, but you can get close with the scissor, and therefore you'd be chayav even with scissors.
He says
You'll never be able to close as close as with the tar. It's an impossibility, a physical impossibility. You can never get with a scissors as close as a razor because you need a counter pressure. And we'll discuss that in a minute about exactly that differentiation that's raised by the Trumas Adeshin. So now the Rekiv Eger asks an amazing question over here, but we'll discuss some of the Machlokes Rishonim and we'll come back to this Rekiv Eger. Now the Rosh agrees with the Tosafot, and he says also that this distinction that exists between Zakan and Pa'at HaRosh. On the other hand, the Rambam, if you look in the Rambam, when he's codifying the Halacha, does not make such a distinction. The Rambam says over here, Upeyazu shimnechim b'tzdaidim lot nandu bo chachamim shiur. There is no shiur. V'shamanu mizikneinu, she'enu meniach pachot mi-arba'im se'arot. You have to have at least 40 se'arot. U'mutar l'lakeit ha-peyot b'misparayim. You're allowed to cut the peyot with scissors. Lo nesar el hashchata bitar. The only restriction is against cutting it off with a tar, with a razor. So both the Kiryat Sefer and the Beit Yosef, in explaining the Rambam Shita, the Rambam believes that there's a hekesh between peyah peyah, just like peyah tarosh and peyah tazakain, zakan. Peyah tazakan is subject to the ta'ar and not misparayim. The same will apply to Pa'at HaRosh. And by Pa'at HaRosh, you also say that the definition or the modification is that only by atar, not by misparayim. So according to the Rambam, the only problem is to be mavir atar al Pa'at HaRosh, just like the problem of Pa'at Zakan is also to be mavir atar. The others, the Rosh and the Tosafot, and Joseph Zier discusses it a little bit. They explain the Gemara when the Gemara comes along, and it sounds like that from Mishnayot and Makot, that the idea of Tar is only referencing the Zakan, the issue of Pa'at HaZakan, not Pa'at HaRosh. Although there are other Tosefot that sound like the Rambam, that sound like this issue of Tar is equally applicable to Zakan and Rosh, and the Rosh and the Tosafot have approved from another Tosefta that's a Gemara that we discussed in Nazir, which is that the Gemara asks, why do you need Dikno and Rosho by the Mitzora to tell you that the Asay is Dochalota Asay? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. What do we need Rosho? Rosho comes to tell you that Asay is Dochalota Asay, is allowed to cut it. What do I need Dikno for? Dikno comes to see me that even with the tar, you have an Asay Dochalota Asay. Wait a minute. If the Rosho, Pat Rosho, was also cut with the only restriction was the tar, you'd know that from Rosho. The fact that the Gemara has to need a second limud, a second chiddush from Dikno, from his beard, to teach you about tar, shows you that the problem of tar only exists by the beard and not by the peyot. So those are the machloket rishonim with regards to this. The Shulchan Aruch, in codifying the Halacha, brings down, by Pe'at HaRosh, Enu Chayav Ele Betar. You only chayav with the tar. That's like the Rambam. The Yesh Osrim b'misparayim keintar. He brings the Yesh Osrim, which is the Tosafot. The Yesh Lachush the Divrehem. He says we should, you know, be choshesh for the Divrei Tosafot. So he brings down first that the Halach is like the Rambam, then he brings down the Yesh Osrim like the Tosafot, and he says we should be choshesh for their words. And now when the Kain Tar, the Shach over there explains that what Kain Tar means Samuch Lepasar Kain Tar. I mean, it has to be, it's not just Stam Misparayim, it has to be Misparayim where you're simulating.
Right. Yeah, but in other words, not just specific.
Right, so you have to simulate what a razor would do over here. So that's the case. Now, when it comes to Pa'at HaZakan, Enu Chayav Ashkatat Pa'at HaZakan Ela Bitar. Only with the tar. Aval B'misparayim Mutar Afilu Kein Tar. When it comes to scissors, even scissors that are like a razor, then it's okay. That's fine by the beard, because the beard's restriction is only a razor. Then all of a sudden the Ramah comes. When you cut with scissors your beard, we're very careful. Right? You should cut with the top blade of the scissor and not the bottom blade of the scissor. Because maybe you do all the work with the bottom blade, and that will make it like using like a razor. This Ramah is actually comes from a Trumat Adeshen. And it was Trumat Adeshen was asked this, Yesh nidud yisur legaleach pat zakan b'misparayim alo? Is there any problem with cutting your beard with scissors? That's what the Trumat Adeshen wants to know. So Tshuva, it's middle of page 3 there. It says, Tshuva, yireh di yesh makom lachmir. It says, there is a reason to be lachmir, she'en olam nizarim b'davar, but nobody cares about this. Kata b'gilyon b'tosafot, b'reish masechet shvuot, this is our Tosafot, v'zeh l'shono. Yesh nizarim b'misparayim, b'misparayim she'en osim b'tachton klum ela b'elyon, when they only work. Ki choshishim she'yasu klum b'tachton, shemi yirash le'yachtok zuga elyon, ela b'tachton, v'hu kamotar. We don't use the regular scissors to cut, because we're afraid that you might use a scissor where the bottom blade is doing the cutting. It's very hard to be careful for this. Amnam, nirad din achon izer shloisaper peata zakan b'misparim shuchadod mod. Right, he said, okay, fine, scissors you can use, but it's something that's very sharp, don't use it. If it's not very sharp, the bottom will not cut without the top blade. Right, this is extremely important to Tadesh and what he's making. It's the statement he makes here. The Ramah, when he quotes him, he leaves out this whole point of the chadud. It's very sharp. He only talks about the fact that we're nizharim, even not to use scissors that are right with the bottom blade of the scissors. But he doesn't talk about the sharpness, which is a key factor over here. And the Rama also brings down Yanira, the tachar agaron, under the throat, in chashash baze, even with scissors. Because there, even with a razor, it's probably mutar. Because according to 90%, 99% of the Rishonim, this has nothing to do with the pata azakan. So when we did the sugya, I showed you the Urayim, and the Rosh quotes also that the voice box, the Adam's apple, might be Shibolet Hazakan, the final point, but that's only very few, almost nobody's severe like that. So say, if you want to cut with scissors under here, no problem whatsoever. Now, why is this important? The issue really revolves around the definition of a razor and the definition of a scissor. What is the definition of a razor? What's the definition of a scissor? A razor works because the razor blade is so sharp that it can cut. Now, a razor blade is so sharp it can cut, it still requires counter pressure in order to cut. What provides the counter pressure for the razor? The skin, right, and the hair itself are what create the counter pressure. So the sharpness of the razor cuts by moving along the skin and using that as the counter pressure. A scissor, on the other hand, what creates the counter pressure for a scissor? The counter pressure for the scissor is the other blade. That's why you need two blades. You need two blades. One blade cuts on the other blade. And that's the counter pressure. By definition, there will always be a blade's worth of hair left because you always have to cut against the blade. So you can only cut the hair as close as the blade gets to your skin. But the cutting is done by the two blades coming up against each other. The Truma Tadesh, when he says this, he makes the point. He says that by scissors, if your upper blade is cutting, no problem. But we're afraid the bottom blade's going to cut. And the bottom blade's doing the cut. We're not worried that they cut as scissors, but what are we worried about? He says, Bechadud Ma'od. If it's very sharp, and the bottom blade's moving back and forth to do the cutting, what could happen? You could actually be shaving you with a razor. You could be actually using the bottom blade as a razor rather than a scissors. It's interesting that the Ramah does not bring that chidud, because that's a very key distinction in the difference between a scissor and a shave, a razor, because that's the distinction. Because of that, and I know I've seen that at a Machon Tzomet, they've written about Rav Soloveitchik also spoke about this, the idea of electric shavers. How do electric shavers work? Electric shavers work by having blades inside. The blades inside spin, and they spin around and they cut. Now, how do they cut? How do those blades cut? Do they cut because they're rubbing against your skin and therefore they are cutting like a razor? No. How they cut is by using the screen that's on top of them. The screen on top of them is the counter pressure for, like by scissors, to allow for the cut. So the screen and then the blade rubs against the screen, pulls the air against the screen and cuts it. And that's how the cutting is done by a electric shaver. And by that definition, that means that every electric shaver would be permissible because the whole cutting mechanism that's used by any electric shaver is a scissor action, not a razor action. The razors are not using your skin as the counter pressure. They're using the screens as the counter pressure in order to cut the hairs that are on the face. Now, one of the tests that you can use, and I've done this many times, you can do, if you really believe that the razor is cutting against the skin, and that's what's causing cutting to happen, then all you have to do is if you write a line on your hand, just an ink on the palm of your hand, write a line, and then shave. Take your shaver and shave over there. If the blade was really rubbing against the skin, and by rubbing against the skin, right, it would be, that's how it's shaving, it's using the skin as counter pressure, what would happen to the writing on your hand? It would erase, right? It would come off. So that you can test it. If you go, you'll see that they don't erase because the counter pressure is not doing it. The screen is there, and that's exactly what the screen does. The screen creates a hefsek between the blade and the skin, and therefore it's not cutting. Now, the lift and cut systems, so some people are choshesh that the lift and cut system pull the skin in. But it's still in the end, when the lift and cut system, it's still cutting against the screen, not against the skin. But there are those that worry about it in those instances because the skin's getting pulled in. Now, the...
They worry about it more in terms of result. In other words, the cutting in that case is the blade kind of lifts it. So, like I said, the resulting cut is like, you know, directly below the surface of the skin.
Right. Although the cut itself, it doesn't matter because it is right. It's going. There's a counter pressure. It's using the screen, which is in the end the counter pressure for it. Now, there are interesting questions that come up. The Noda Bihuda about this a little bit. He talks about dilapatories that you can use for taking off. And there's some. He got a question from some poskim who said you can't use it with a stone. And he says you can use it with a stick or a stone. That's how people use these dilapatories to take off. But he says just make sure that the stone or the stick that you're using isn't so sharp that it cuts like a razor. You have to use it that it's just removing the depilatory with the hair itself, right? And that's how it's taking off the hair. Just make sure it's not so sharp.
The Noda Bihuda was also asked a question with regards to someone who cut their beard off with the scissors and then shaved with a razor. The questioner wanted to suggest that this, once they've cut off by the scissors all the hair down to a point where the hair is so short, and then he cuts with the razor, there don't be no more isur. Why is that? Because you know the Gemara Makot tells us that scissors can accomplish giluach. They can do giluach, but they can't do hashchata. On the other hand, a malakit and rehitni can do hashchata. They can't do giluach. The tar, the razor, is the only one that can do both. Both hashchata and giluach. But now, what happened? He already cut with the scissors to a point where the hair was very short. When he did that, he already accomplished giluach. Now when the razor comes, all he's doing is hashchata. So maybe for that, he should not be chayav. Number two is, we know throughout Shas that there are examples of the length of hair by which one is chayav. The length of hair is when Rosho can be kafuf back to Ikaro. You can take the top of the hair and twist it back. It's long enough that it twists back to the root of the hair. That's the requirement we have by Mitzora, by Nazir, by Paraduma. And based on that, if the hair is shorter than that amount, then maybe when he cuts with the razor, he should not be chayav. That's what the questioner suggested. The Noda Bihuda responds and says, no, that those applications of Rosho, Magiad Ikaro, that is only a requirement by Nazir, Mitzvah, and Paraduma. It's not relevant at all by shaving. By shaving, even the smallest amount of hair you are chayav for, and then with cutting the razor, you'll be chayav doraisa, even for the smallest hair. And that means that even after you've cut with the scissors, you're still going to be chayav when it comes to a razor. After that, the Noda Bihuda discusses a very famous case here by Chol HaMoed.
In shaving on Chol HaMoed, he discusses an interesting case about people who wanted to shave on Erev Achag, are they allowed to shave on the Chag itself? And so there he speaks about maybe there's a heter to shave on the Chag itself if you had it on, if you shaved the Erev Achag based as a Rabbeinu Tam, who suggests that if you shave the whole problem of it's not shaving on Chol HaMoed, so we're afraid you won't shave Erev Achag, you only shave on Chol HaMoed, you won't be ready for the Chag. But if you do it, you do shave Erev Achag, then there shouldn't be a problem with shaving on Chol HaMoed itself. So there, the Truma Zadesh wants to distinguish. He says, Rabbeinu Tam says it's all based on the problem of Shema, that you won't, you'll be lazy and you won't shave before. He says, no, that the problem is really, the Truma Zadesh says the problem is a melocha. The shaving on Yom Tov is possibly a melocha. And therefore you can get rid of it if you need for certain heterim. What are the heterim to get rid of it? So there he, the question is presented by someone who has to go to the Sarim Nichbadim, he has to go to Goyim, and he wants to shave because they make fun of him when he doesn't shave. So he wanted to come and shave. So he says, you have an ani who has no parnasa, come and do the shave. Because that's one of the things that's allowed in Chol HaMoed, is davar avei, but also someone who needs parnasa can do something for parnasa. So you mefarnes the ani by doing that. But that's only a heter if you think the problem is malach on Chol HaMoed. If you think the problem is this shema by the mechachamim, then you couldn't do that, because it's a gzeres chachamim, you couldn't get around it. So Jumas Adeshin is mechadish that. And another tshuva, later tshuvas, he starts to back away from his, many years later, he writes that he backs away from this answer, that he's not so comfortable with people shaving on Chol HaMoed. He says, but I don't want to be megaleh the tam that I actually said that it's mutter, and why I allowed people to be matirit. The Chasam Sofer, many years later, the Chasam Sofer writes that he disagrees, everybody disagrees with the Noda Bihuda, and including him, he brings down why he disagrees with the Noda Bihuda on Chol HaMoed. And then he says, let me be, even the Noda Bihuda himself backed away from it, and I'm going to be megaleh sod here. Why is it that the Noda Bihuda wanted people to shave on Chol HaMoed? He says because Be'avonoteinu Rabim, people were shaving with razors in those days. And they were shaving with razors. What was he afraid of? If they shaved every day with the razor, then the hair never grew long enough that there may not be a Isur Doraisa. Even though the Noda Bihuda himself held that there was no shear for shaving with the razor, he said there were many Rishonim believed, and he quotes others who believe that you need a kofet rosho, that the hair has to be able to turn back to the root in order to be chayav for shaving with the razor. The Noda Bihuda rejects that. But nevertheless, he, based on the other shita, that that is the case, then he preferred people to shave every day with a razor. Why? Because it could be preventing them from getting to an Isur Doraisa. If they waited through Chol HaMoed and they shaved after the Moed, then they were Vadai over a Isur Doraisa. So better to have them shave on Chol HaMoed with the razor and never be over Isur Doraisa, and only be over an Isur Drabonon. So that was the, that's the Chazon Sofer, what the Noda Behuda's logic is. Chazon Sofer rejects the logic. He says, I disagree. And one of the reasons he says, it's just that you see that you can't, but they're going to shave for Erev Yom Tov Hasheni or something like that. You're going to turn out that the hair is already long enough. He says, Baham Masim B'chol Yom, that after 2 days already, it's long enough, the hair is long enough, and there's nothing to talk about. So unless they shave at Mamash every day, it's not going to be that right. You miss the Shabbos, you have 2 days of Yom Tov already, right? You could have, the problem arises much faster than the Nodav is willing to do. But it happens to be very interesting, Nodav Yehuda and Chazon Sofer dealing with tar. So they wanted to deal with it because of the Tosfos here introduces the idea that scissors are like a tar. The last thing I wanted to speak about is Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, based on Tosos says that by your sideburns, by Pe'at HaRosh, that the Sfarayim have the same din as Tar. The same exact din as a Tar. So now it's also by Misfarayim, it's also by Tar. So you know what Rabbi Akiva says? Well, Misfarayim, we know, have the same din as what? Malakit and Rehitni. Malakit and Rehitni means that a tweezer or with a plane, you're not allowed to take them off. Meaning that the Gemara never differentiates between Misfarayim and Malakit and Rehitni. Even though Tosus over here leans that way a little bit, that's only a Habamino. In the end, Tosus does not differentiate like that. That would mean, according to Tosfos, when it comes to one's Pe'at HaRosh, you'd be Osir B'Malakit, Rehitni, and Misfarayim. What's the big deal? Rabbi Yehuda says, Tzarchi and Goldo, I don't know if you can comb your Peis. I don't know if you comb your Peis. Why? It's a Din and Nozir. A Nozir is not allowed to comb his hair. Why? Because it's a Psik Resha that he will take out hair from his head. Now what happens to it? You're going to brush your sideburns. It's going to be a psik ratio when you comb your sideburns that you're going to take out a hair. And we just said there's a problem by Malakit Rehitni and Misfarayim. No matter how you take out the hair of Pe'at HaRosh, there's a problem according to the Tosafot. So he says, based on that, he says, Tzarch in Godol. He says, I don't know why the Shulchan Aruch, right, doesn't mention this. And based on the Psak Halacha that we hold, that we're Choshesh for the Tosafot sheet over here, why aren't we Choshesh for combing our hair or combing our sideburns, combing the peyot? It's the unbelievable Rabbi Akiva Eiger over here. You could differentiate, and that might be the answer in the end, might be that in order to, what is restricted versus what is Lo Takifu Pe'at Roshchem? Which area is considered the Pe'at HaRosh, as well as how many se'arot do you have to pull out in order to be chayav for Pe'at HaRosh? That might deal with the Rambam. The Rambam says there are 40 se'arot there. What are those 40 se'arot that he's talking about? Where's the 40 se'arot? Because the peyot have both a length and a width to them. And so what is he speaking about versus the Tosefta that says it's two se'arot? So based on that, it might be that to be in violation of the Isur, according to Rashi at least, you have to cut off the whole peyot. I mean, if the peyot is still, any part of the peyot is still there, then you're not in violation. So according to that, you don't have to worry. But according to the Tosefta and the other Rishonim who say that even two sarot is enough, then you have to start worrying about combing. But maybe two sarot is enough not to worry, because one sara, fine, maybe when you comb two sarot, maybe not. But the Rekibi Eka leaves it as a tzarachim godol, based on this Tosos, of how we comb our, or brush our peyot. All right, so now we go in, back into the Mishnah Shavuos here. Say, Mishnah Hocha Datani Lekulu. Why in our Mishnah here in Shavuot do we break all the categories down? We bring down Shavuot, Nigayim, Shabbos, right? All these different categories of Shtein Shin Arba. But if you go to Shabbos, Mishnah Gabi Tziot to Shabbat, Amorot Nigayim, to Lok Tani Lehu. If you go to the Mishnah in Nigayim, and if you go to the Mishnah in Shabbos, there it just says Tziot to Shabbos, Shtein Shin Arba. No other topics. Nigayim, the same thing. So cool. So Imrei Shavuot V'Yadiyot Tuma Degabe Adodik Tivin. Wait, because in the Torah, at the end of this Parashat Vayikra, when it talks about Karban Olev Yoreid, there are two parashiyot that are there. Right, there are actually three, but two of the parashiyot that we're going to deal with here. One is Shvuat Abitui, and one is Tumat Mikdash Ugdashov. They're both there. So since they are both come out of the same psukim, or the same parashat of Torah, therefore we're going to put them together. Bedamina Hadadi, and they're similar to each other, but Karban Olev Yoreid. Tani Lehu Gabe Hadadi, therefore we wrote them together in the Mishnah. Vayadi Tani Tar, once we're already, you know, expanding the list beyond just Shavuot, right, Tanu Kulu, so therefore we got through all of them. So that's why we have an extensive or exhaustive list here, because already we're going to deal with Shavuot and Yediyot HaTumah, so they threw in Shabbos and Nigayim on top of that. So now the Gemara says, for the Mishnah Patach B'Shavuot, it starts Shavuot Shtayim Shein Arba, Umrufaresh Yediyot HaTumah, and then it, right after it finishes the Mishnah, it goes on to speak about Yediyot HaTumah. So why does it not deal with Shavuot, especially since this is Masechet Shavuot, right? And even if you want to say that it's going to deal with, you know, Makom Shenistalek, right? That's where you're going to deal with it. Well, we also had Shtayim Shen Arba by Marot Nigayim. So why are you getting onto Yediyot HaTumah? So as the Gemara says, I this is dry milayu psik shari lahu v'adur tani shvot and efishin milayu. Since the Yediyot HaTumah is a small category of halacha and it's contained, therefore the Mishnah and the Gemara explained those first, and then afterwards it went back to Shavuot. Now this is not exactly true because Shavuot habitui is only one perek in this Masechta, whereas Yediyot HaTumah are two perekim in this Masechta. So what do you tell? Tosa says, no, when we talk about Shavuot, we mean the broader category of Shavuot. I mean, if you include Shavuot Bitui, Shavuot Eidut, Shavuot Adaninim, Shavuot Apikadon, then merely the Shavuot are much larger. Then the whole category of Shavuot is a much larger category than Yediyot HaTumah. Therefore, the Gemara says, let's deal with Yediyot HaTumah, and then we'll move on to Shavuot, and we'll deal with Shavuot. Now the Gemara is going to explain the Shtayim Shein Arba. We did it in the Mishnah, but now the Gemara is going to go through it. Shavuot, Shtayim Shein Arba. Shtayim, what are the Shtayim? Shochel, Vishalo Ochel. I will eat, or I will not eat. Shein Arba is Achalti, Vishalo Achalti. So the future tense is the Hara Ulehetiv. The Hara Ulehetiv is in the future tense, so that's what the Pasuk is speaking about. And then Shein Arba is a derivative that we learn out, right, that not only is applied to the future, it also applies to the past, which is that if I make a Shavuot about Achalti, whether I ate or Shalo Achalti, or I did not eat. Now, Yediyot HaTumah Shtayim Shein Arba, what are they? Shtayim Yediyot HaTumah Kodesh V'Yediyat Tumat Mikdash. The case of the Torah is where I knew I was Tameh, I know the Mikdash, I know there's Kodesh, and I know that I'm entering the Mikdash, I know that I'm eating Kodesh, but I forgot that I was Tameh. I knew I was Tameh, and then I forgot about being Tameh afterwards. So the idiot here is that I know about the Kodesh, I know about the Mikdash, that I'm not allowed to enter them, but I forgot that I was Tameh. Shein Arba, what's the Arba? It's Kodesh and Mikdash. That I, instead of forgetting that I was Tameh, I forgot this was the Mikdash, or I forgot this was Kodesh. So I remember that I'm Tameh, but I forgot that you can't enter the Mikdash with this Tumah. Or I knew I was Tameh, but I forgot this was Kodesh, and therefore I ate it anyway. So that's the Shtayim Shein Arba by Yediyot HaTumah. Yediyot HaShabbat, as we discussed yesterday, Shtayim Shein Arba, Shtayim Hotza'ah De'ani Ve'Hotza'ah De'Bal HaBayit. Right, that's a Hotza'ah based on the one who's on the Ani, who's on the outside, meaning he's standing in Rishut HaRabim, taking something from Rishut HaYachid out to the Rishut HaRabim, or the Bal HaBayit who's standing inside the Rishut HaYachid and he's taking something from the Rishut HaYachid and passing it out to the Rishut HaRabim. Both of those are Hotza'ah, but dependent on where you're standing. Yesterday we discussed why is that a Chiddush. Right, we discussed the Tosus' reasoning and the Rabbeinu Tam's reasoning about Hotzara, why you have to have such a Chiddush. Shein Arba, what's Arba? It's the two Hachnasot. Doing Hachnasot means bringing it from the Rishut HaRabim into the Rishut HaYachid, which is the Ani, Hachnasot the Bal HaBayit. The Hachnasot of the Ani means the Ani is on the outside of the Rishut HaRabim and he passes something in to the Rishut HaYachid, or the Bal HaBayit is standing in the Rishut HaYachid, takes something from the Rishut HaRabim and brings it into the Rishut HaYachid. Marot Negaim, Shnaim Shein Arba. Right, so what are these two? Shnaim. The two are Se'et u'Baheret. Those are the two that are found in the Pasuk, the Se'et and the Baheret, which we discussed yesterday. Those are the whites, right? The white is Kesheleg, right? And the white is like a pure wool. Those are the two most white that you can find. And then it says Vasapachat. So in the Pasuk it says Vasapachat, but a Sapachat is not a real Nega. It's not a shape. Sapachat is like the word Nispach, means a derivative of the other two. So you have the Nispach, or the Sapachat HaBaheret, and you have the Sapachat HaSeit, which is the Sidaichal, the white of the Sidaichal, and Krum Beitza. Those are the four types of white that you're chayav for by Nigayim, Shein Arba. So that makes up the Arba over here. Seit, Vitoldata, Baheret, Vitoldata. And that's the Sapacha that we have over here. So my wants to know, Mani Manitan, who is the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Yishmael, Velo Rabbi Akiva. No, neither Rabbi Yishmael nor Rabbi Akiva can be the author of our Mishnah. Why? Because I Rabbi Yishmael, Amar, Inu Chayav Ela Atidavo. Rabbi Shmuel is pretty clear that you're only chayav by Shavuot Abitui on the Atid Lavo, not on the Avar. Our Mishnah says Shtayin Shein Arba, which says you're even chayav for the Avar. Amar. E Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says, Amar, Elam Tumahu Chayav. Rabbi Akiva says, you only Chayav when it comes to forgetting about the fact that you were Tamei. Veino Chayav Elam Helam Mikdash. But it's not, you're not Chayav if you forget that it was the Mikdash, you forget that it's Kodesh. So both of them cannot fit in the Mishnah because both of them will not Darshan Shtaim Shinar Bai. Rabbi Shmuel not by Shvata Bitoi, and Rabbi Akiva not by Yediota Tumah. Some say we can explain it to Rabbi Shmuel, some say according to Rabbi Akiva. That we can make the mention of Rabbi Shmuel. Mehen lechiyuv, mehen liftor. Doesn't mean all the arba are for a chiyuv, right? That doesn't mean they're all chayav. Just means that there are four types, four permutations of what a shviyata bitui is. Nevertheless, you only be chayav for two of them. V'ibaytema, Rabbi Akiva. So it could be Rabbi Akiva, mehen lechiyuv, mehen liftor. Right, so that's, again, this idea that the Shtayim Shin Arba is just telling permutations of the situation, not telling you whether you are Chayav or not. Now, truthfully, by Rabbi Shmuel, it makes a little more sense, because Rabbi Shmuel here says that if you're not Chayav in the Atid, there you're talking about the Korban, right? But nevertheless, you're over an Isur when you take a Shvat Bitui about the Avar. So fine, you won't bring a Korban Olev Yored. You won't maybe get, right, you won't be in violation that brings you to a Korban. But nevertheless, you are violating an Isur. According to Rabbi Akiva, there is no Isur over here because you're not doing anything, right? You're not really doing anything. But Mezid, you're not taking any action here. Although, Tosfot over here in the end suggests, Mikomakom Chashiv Lu Shapir Shein Arba Hov Bekavit Isura B'Shogeg. Since B'Shogeg is entering into the Mikdash or the Kodesh, and he should have known this, that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Nevertheless, it's like a Shogeg, and maybe that's enough to be, even though it's not an Isur Gomor, nevertheless, it's still a Shogeg. Whereas for Rabbi Shmuel, if you did it B'Mezid, you'd be in violation of an Isur over here. And that's right, even though that's the difference between the Shtayim Shin Arba. Alright, so nevertheless, the Gemara, it is a weak answer, we know that, and therefore the Gemara is going to have to try to come to a better conclusion. Alright, so Gemara says, Liftor, how could you say some of them are Chiyu, some of them are Patur? Hadum yu demarot negayim ketani. By the marot negayim, we know that all four colors of white, all four shades of white, are for the Chiyu. There are negayim tmeim. So if that's the case, mahatam kulu luchuyuva, afkacha, nami kulu luchuyuva. If that's the case, then it's true. By number one, by Shvat Bitoy. It'll be true by Yitziot Tumah, and also be true by Yitziot Shabbat. Because otherwise, it says, why don't you learn out from Yitziot Shabbat that all four are Chayav? You know what he says? We also learned that out from Negayim, that all four are Chayav, because Negayim is the standard by which we know that all four are Chayav, and therefore all the other three cases, we now know that what the Mishnah is enumerating for us here is the four types of Chiyuvim. So where it says, okay, Logam Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel is the author of Rabbi Mishnah. Mechilo Mechayiv Rabbi Shmuel Lushavar. When he's not Mechayiv in the Avar, is Korban. Aval Malkot Chiyuve Mechayiv. Right? So that's it. He does it in the past. He talks about no Korban. That's no Korban all over your rate, because there it says La'aral Eitiv. But it comes to the past, then he is Chayiv Ukedurova. What's he Mechayiv you for the past? If you're not chayav from the pasuk of a korban olev yored, what is the pasuk that makes you chayav? Damar Rav Feirish Ripta Torah Shvat Sheker Dumya D'Shvat Shav. So that Shvat Sheker has a din like Shvat Shav, Mashav L'Shavar, just like a Shvat Shav is in the past tense. Af Sheker Namali Shavar. So too, Sheker has to be in the past tense. Now, what's a Shvat Shav? A Shvat Shav is a Shvat that you take to change something that is absolutely known, and it's clear that you're taking a Shvat that is meaningless and useless. So, for instance, if you take a shvua, this table is right here, and you tell me, you take a shvua that this is a chair, right? So that's it. It's a shvua shav. It's unnecessary. It's clear to anybody sitting here that you're wrong. And obviously, you're talking about something in the past tense. I mean, you're not making any statement about the future, about what's going to happen. You're making a statement of fact, or you're actually trying to upend or contradict something that is factual. So that is a shvua shav. A Shvuat Sheker is something that could be either subject to interpretation or subject to knowing something. So for instance, if someone takes a Shvuat Achalti or Lo Achalti, that is a Shvuat Sheker, because not everybody knows whether you did eat or did not eat. Only you do know whether you did or not. And therefore you have to check to see if it's a Shek. I mean, in the end, you can establish
the difference is that in that case, theoretically, it could be true. Right.
Right. It can never be true. That is correct. That's right. So that's a Shvat Sheker, which needs checking into to see whether it is true or not true, whereas a Shvat Shav is automatically a Sur. Now, what is the source? Is it Machalkas Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hanan all over here? Both Rashi first. Rashi says, what's the source over here? He says the source is actually a member of Rabbi Yochanan, which we'll see later in the Masechta, which is, it says, Lo Tisa Hashem Elokecha L'Shav, Ki Lo Yinakeh Hashem Et Eser Et Asher Yisrael Et Shmo L'Shav. It says Shav in the Pasuk twice. So the Gemara wants to know, why do you have Shav twice? So one Shav is to teach you about Shvat Shav. The second Shav is to teach you Shvat Sheker. So that's the heckish between Shav and Sheker, because they're found in that one pasuk. In that pasuk it says, Kilo Yinakeh Hashem Et Asher Yisrael Shmo L'Shav. That tells you that Hashem will not be Menakeh, someone who takes a B'Shav. But Beis Din can be Menakeh. How is Beis Din Menakeh somebody? They give Malkot. So that's a lima that by Shvat Sheker and Shvat Shav you get Malkot. And how do we know it's the Avar? Because of the heckish between Shav and Sheker. That's a lima according to Rashi. Tosfos points out the reason that the problem, or the Rabbeinu Hanan doesn't like this, is because Rabbi Yochanan is separate from Rava and the Gemara further on. There's Rava's statement in Mefarsh Rik the Torah, and then you have another statement of Rabbi Yochanan that are independent. So it sounds like Rava's source is a different source. And Rava's source, according to Rabbeinu Hanan, is, well, you have to look at the two Luchot. The Luchot that are mentioned in Parshat Vayitro and the ones that are mentioned in Et Hanan. Why? Because in one of them it says, right, by the Luchot Rishonim, it says, Lo Tane Briacha Eid Shoker. Right? And then in the second Luchot it says, Lo Tane Briacha Eid Shav. So he said, nothing to do with Shavuot. This is about Eidut. But it uses the word Shav and Sheker synonymously. And that's the point. That's what Rava says. First rip the Torah. The Torah, the fact that Fork and the Torah can exchange the word Shav for Sheker, tells you Shav equals Sheker. They're the same din, the same thing. So now, once I know that Shav and Sheker are equal, then I don't need the limud of Yochanan. I just need to know what the din by Shav is. Once I know the din by Shav, I can apply it to Sheker as well. So that's the way Rabbeinu Hanan learns it versus the way Rashi learns it. But now, once we know this, the Gemara says, Bishloma achalti velo achalti ki the Rava. Right now, it makes sense. Achalti lo achalti, that's Rava's din. Shvat Sheker, you get Malkot for. Shlo ochel v'achal. He says, in the future I will not eat, and he does eat. Nami, lav sheish bo masu. That's a lav that you're actively violating the Shvuah by eating. But about ochel, if he says, I will eat, he takes a Shvuah to eat in the future. And then he says, sheish v'al tasev v'lo ochel. And he doesn't eat. Amai. Why should he be chayav Malkot in that case? Lav sheish bo masu. So lav sheish bo masu. Why should he be chayav? So Mar says, Kosav Rabbi Shmuel, lav sheish bo masu, lo kin alav. Because Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that Lav Shem Bo Maase Lokin Alav, Rashi eliminates Girsa here. There was he calls it a Matalvi Toeh, wrote on the side of the Gemara here. It can't be that this is true, because there is a question from the Gemara in Elohim Alokin, in Makot, where there the Gemara says that Rabbi Shmuel holds Lav Shem Bo Maase in Lokin Alav. So there the Gemara, Rashi explains that the Gemara there was only trying to figure out Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, and therefore they tried to establish his way, and then they rejected it in the end. And then Rabbi Shmuel believes that Lav Shem Bo Maase Lokin Alav. And so he says, the Talmid Toed, they put a note on the side, and then it got included in the Gemara. So Rashi takes it out of the Girsa over here, in order that it's not a problem. That's why we don't have it in our Girsa. Rashi says, Yochai Kasher Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan always runs himself into problems. Why? Because Rabbi Yochanan made a general principle. Loch Kistam Mishnah. Loch is like a Stam Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. Stam Mishnah says, Lav Shein Bo Maase, Lo Kin Alav. Vitmar, and we have a Memro that says, Shvua Shochel Kikar Zu Ayom. Va'avar Vayom Vayom. He takes the Shavuot to eat a kikar today. And the whole day goes by and he doesn't eat it. Rabbi Yochanan Meshlag, Jarmi Tavai, Ueno Loke. He doesn't get Malkot. We saw this together in Sanhedrin. We saw this in Makot. Why? Rabbi Yochanan Marino Loke, Mishum Davil Lav Shein Bo Maase. Rabbi Yochanan says, Lav Shein Bo Maase, he can't get Malkot. If he's holding Aloch Hastam Mishnah, that's going against his own memory here, where Rabbi Shmuel says, Lav Shein Bo Maase, Loke Nalav. The whole Lav Shein Bo Maase, and Loke Nalav. Reshlag, Jarmi Loke, Hatrat Safeki, Hatrat Safek, Loshma Hatra. Which is Makot, Rabbi Yochanan Meshlag. Rabbi Yochanan says, Hatrat the fake is a Torah, and therefore he said the problem here is Lav Shein Bo Maase. Rabbi Reish Lakish says, no, the problem here is Hatrat Safek, and therefore, right, he can't be talking, the problem is not Lav Shein Bo Maase. Actually, according to Rabbi Reish Lakish, Shein Ochanami, Lav Shein Bo Maase is Lokin Alav. So Rabbi Yochanan, Stamach Min Ashkach. So hey, Rabbi Yochanan found a different stam. Hi, stamma. What's the other stam mission that Rabbi Yochanan found that Lav Shein Bo Maase ain't Lokin Alav? So Ilay Ma'ai stamma, you think it's this one, that's none. Avala Mutir B'Tahor, Veshover B'Tamei Eno Lokeh. Somebody who leaves over by a tor, an animal tor, which is notar, and then he has to afterwards be sereful tobaish, or a shover betame, someone takes a carbon pesach tame and breaks a bone in it, inolokeh atar bayim, he doesn't get malkot. Bishlamo shover betame dichtiv, why when you break a bone on the Tamei, Korban Pesach, you're not Chayav, because it's Etzem Lotish Beru Bo, B'Kasher, V'lo B'Psul. Right, that has to be a Kosher Pesach in order to be Chayav, Shvirat Etzem. Shvirat Etzem doesn't work with a Pesul Pesach, which is a Pesach that is Tamei. What's the reason that when you leave over from the Korban Pesach, that you're not Chayav Malkot? Leave me over the Korban Pesach as a Sheva Al Tatsa. You just sit around and you watch it go. So everybody says, no, B'cholav Shem B'masa, and look in the love. Maybe that's the Stam Mishnah. Everybody says, U'mimai, the Rabbi Yaakov, who says that the author of this Brito is Rabbi Yaakov, D'amar lo, love Shem B'masa, and look in the love, D'ilma Rabbi Yehudahi. Maybe he's the other one. Mishum deba, akatub li tein aseh achar lo taseh, it's a lav ani tak de aseh. Halav hochi loki. No, in Ochanami, it would have been loki, it was a lav Shem B'masa. But the problem is, it's a lav ani tak de aseh, the Tanya. We have a Brisa, lo tu tu don't leave it over until the morning. If you do leave it over until the morning, burn it. Rabbi Yehuda says what? The problem here is lav shein bo maaseh lo kin alav. So what? Why no malkut here? Because it's a lav anitak liyaseh. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, lo min hashein muzeh. Why do you have to get to lav anitak liyaseh? The problem is even more fundamental. It's a lav shein bo maaseh. So why can't Rabbi Yehuda be the author of that Mishnah? And the reason you don't get Malkot by Notar is because it's a Lav Ani Takta Seif. But in Ochanami, if it was a Lav Shem B'masa, you would get Malkot on it. Lav Shem B'masa ain't looking a Lav. Ela Hai Stama Ashkach. He found the other Stama. Shvua Shlo Achel Kikar Zu. Shvua Shlo Achlena. Vachla. Takes a Shvua, he won't eat it. Shvua Shlo Achlena, he says, I won't eat it. Vachla. And then he eats it. Enu Chayav Ela Achat. Then he's only Chayav once. Because once he was oserit by the first one, the second shvua is, right, nishba l'kayimet a mitzvah, right, and then nishba l'kayim a mitzvah and didn't do it, is patur mishvua to karban. Because he took one shvua to say it's asur. Then when he takes the second shvua, he's being taking a shvua to be mekayimet a mitzvah. Shvua to be mekayimet a mitzvah is not subject to the regular rules of shvua, and therefore he won't get malkot. So he's only chayav once, even though he made two statements. Shvua shloach lena, shvua shloach hel first, and then shvua shloach lena. Despite that fact, he only gets one set of malkot. Zui shvuat bitui shechayav and alav zdono malkot shgudah karban olav yirid. This is the case of shvuat bitui where you are going to get malkot if you do b'mezid, and b'shkagah you'll get olav yirid. Zui dechayav and alav zdono malkot aval ochel v'lo achal lo lucky. What's the inference from this? The inference from this would be that that's where you get malkot, but if you made it a positive statement shvua shochel and you didn't eat it, then you wouldn't get malkot. Michtei, high stama, high stama. You have a stama here in Perek Aleph, and you have a stam Mishnah in Perek Gimel. Why did Rabbi Yochanan pick the one in Perek Gimel, not the one over here? Why the Chazi David ki high stama, David ki high stama? Why does he pick the one in Perek Gimel over the one in Perek Aleph? Litameich, Rabbi Gufeich, he stamla and achi. How did Rabbi do? Rabbi's inside of the Mishnah. He was soaking the Mishnah, and he put one Mishnah that's a stam Mishnah of Lav Shein Bo Maaseh Lo Kin Alav, and then another stam Mishnah in the Perek Gimel says Lav Shein Bo Maaseh. Ain't loki in a love. How could he do this? So my says, someone hocha hachi ba'ocha hachi. Elam ikara sover lav shein bo mas loki in a love. Is that stama or satma? Rebbe believed originally lav shein bo mas loki in a love. That's what he thought originally. He made that into the stam mishnah. But other sover later on, he changed his mind and he says ain't loki in a love is satma. And then he put it later on and he made it to a stam mishnah later on. O mishnah lo zozo mim koma. So then the original Mishnah we don't take out anymore. So the Mishnah Rishona, Afu Pish Chazaro Mistimata, Rashi says, Me'achashe Pashta Berova Talmidim. Once it became well accepted, Lo Aya Yecholot B'dorot Shachar Rebbe L'Shachacha Mipihem U'Levatla Mibeit HaMidrash. Once it gained such great acceptance, it was very hard to erase the Mishnah from the lexicon. I mean, again, remember, this is Torah Shabbat Peh. People are memorizing it. If they're memorizing Mishnayot, all of a sudden they erase that Mishnah. Right? It's not so easy. I mean, that this is how they have their Mishnah. Somebody who's smart will understand that it's the second one that's the real Mishnah because it's second. Right? It comes afterwards, and that's he was Chozerbo from the original opinion. Okay, we'll stop over here.